I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today it's Midday on transportation. Delegate Robin Lewis, who represents East Baltimore in the Maryland General Assembly, has formed the Livable Streets Advisory Group to collect ideas as to how some of Baltimore's busiest thoroughfares can be made safer for pedestrians. She joins us from Annapolis. Ridership on the Charm City Circulator in Baltimore is down nearly 50%. The Baltimore Link bus system has an on-time reliability rating of only 65%. The Maryland Transit Administration faces a shortfall of $2 billion over the next 10 years. What's the outlook for solving the transportation challenges in the Baltimore metro area? Samuel Jordan of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition and Brian O'Malley of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance join me when Midday hits the road right after these headlines. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Today it's Midday on transportation. A little later in the program, we're going to speak with Samuel Jordan of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition and Brian O'Malley of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. But we begin today with a member of the Maryland General Assembly for whom transportation issues are often front of mind, particularly the kind of transportation that happens with 2 feet. Delegate Robin Lewis represents the 46th Legislative District in South and East Baltimore. Delegate, welcome back. Good to talk to you.
Great to be here, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So we want to talk about an initiative that you've come up with for folks that live along the Fayette, the Orleans, the Monument, and Madison Street corridors in East Baltimore called the Livable Streets Advisory Group. What's that all about?
I'll tell you what this is about. So over the last year, I've been forced to accept a level of humility about how to engage my constituents and how to make change that benefits them. What I've done is listened. That's a big part of my job. I listened, and what I learned from listening to my constituents is that they want to be heard. They want to have a voice in how our communities change and develop. So the Livable Streets Advisory Group is a little initiative that I started that engages constituents, residents, where they are, and ask them to tell me how they want their streets, their public right-of-way, their shared spaces to be improved. What I've done is use strategies from community organizing. I call it community organizing 101. You knock on a door, you reach out to a person, you ask them what they think. By asking folks what they think about how our public domain is designed and how it serves or doesn't serve them, I've already gotten an incredible feedback that's told me that people care about transportation. They care about it because it is a strategy, it's a tool to get them where they need to go to seek opportunity.
Sure, you had the first meeting of this group just last Saturday. What did you hear from folks? What are the kinds of ideas that they're sharing with you?
Well, they said what you would expect. When you ask people, what does livability mean to you? It means ease and comfort of getting to school, work, recreation, to the doctor, to the grocery store. What people are telling me on the doors and in the communities is that they want to be able to walk safely. They want to be able to sit on their porch and enjoy nature. They want to breathe clean air. They all want their children to be safe outside. The corridor in question, what I'm calling the focus area, was chosen because it has a high rate of traffic crashes that involve not just cars, but cars and pedestrians. It has a very terrible low rate of air quality and some of the highest pediatric asthma in the city. It has a low walkability score, which means that it's very difficult to go on foot to access the amenities you want, your doctor, your grocery store, in a safe and pleasant way.
I wonder if we could concentrate on that for a second, just because our focus today on this show is transportation. When it comes to streets like Fayette and Orleans, Monument, Madison, those are busy streets, lots of cars, 24 hours a day. What are some of the ideas that you've developed or some of your constituents have developed about how to make those streets more walkable?
Walkability simply means being able to get where you need to go on foot in a safe and pleasant way. It also means that you can travel on foot at some distance and still experience a safe and pleasant, you know, journey. People want sidewalks that are well-maintained, that are not broken and cracked. People want sidewalks that are wide enough that they can cross two by two. People want to feel that they're not encroached upon by high-speed racing pollution-fuming cars. Folks want to feel the canopy of trees overhead. They want to be able to see things that are interesting and attractive. You know, they want to see shops and gardens and flowers and pots. They want to be able to make eye contact with their neighbors. And that's where livability gets to. It's really about quality of life. If you think about the fact that 30% of our city surface area is roads, it's right-of-way. That 30% has been devoted almost exclusively to the convenience of moving cars. Folks in the neighborhoods are telling me, we want to get where we want to go without having to be afraid of getting run over. And I think this gets to an approach to governance, public consultation, that centers the resident. It centers the person with their lived experience. And by doing that, we can not only improve quality of life for everyone, improve livability for everyone, we can also start to dismantle the historic habits, conventions, and structures that deny people access to opportunity. And let me just say one more thing, Tom. The reason this is so important in the focus area we're looking at, this is a predominantly African-American community. It's not an accident that a predominantly African-American community is beset and besieged by high-speed roads running through the middle of it. You will not see high-speed roads and air pollution like we have in this area in neighborhoods that are better resourced and wealthier.
Yeah, and that goes back to transportation decisions made, you know, decades ago, of course. In terms of what you hope to come of this in a timeline, I mean, because what you're talking about isn't necessarily just transportation policy. I mean, it's infrastructure, it's environment, it's a lot of different things. Do you hope to garner a collection of recommendations and present them in some ways? How do you see this process playing out?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's exactly what we're getting at. One of the formative experiences of this year for me was the upheaval about the Monument Street bike lane. That experience was important, not just for me, but because it shines a light on how public processes should work, a public consultation about an infrastructure, a transportation project, how that should be done. And that takes me back to the way the Red Line light rail project was planned. It was done through public consultation in a very assertive and respectful way that resulted in a document called the Red Line Community Compact. I want to emphasize this just because I think it's a way forward when it comes to engaging the communities to envision and build our transportation future. The Red Line Community Compact was essentially a treaty between the city of Baltimore and the people of Baltimore. And in that treaty were defined the mechanisms and systems and approaches to community engagement, a promise for specific benefits that would accrue to neighborhoods that would be affected by the Red Line, benefits like access to employment, benefits like mitigation when...
Yeah, but of course, as we all know, the governor decided to, you know, get rid of the Red Line, so that's no longer on the table.
He did, but you know what's left?
As we
speak.
This
is important, Tom. The project was canceled in a really, I think, immoral way. But what's left is the compact, and this matters now because it's an example of something Baltimore did incredibly well. Cities and our states around the country looked to Baltimore at this compact to see how we engage people and envisioned a better transportation future. I think from the Monument bike lane, the problem there was a weakness.
We should remind folks that there was a church in particular that was concerned about the bike lane taking up 12 parking spaces. The bike lane was installed and then part of it was removed, and it seemed to be quite a controversial thing that happened last spring. But just quickly, let me have you finish your thought as we finish up here.
Yes, the compact is a way for us to move forward on engaging residents and in designing and planning and building our transportation future. We cannot go on where every time a big infrastructure or land use change is made, and allow it to be, you know, undermined, sabotaged, slowed down by folks who have not been included in the design process. And a compact like that could be a way forward. Baltimore was really good at creating a compact for a big project in the past. I think when it comes to livability, transportation, and equity in supporting our community's development, if we do that in with a kind of compact-like model, I think we can avoid problems we've had in the past, and I think we'll end up with a better city, one that serves everyone. And I hope this livability advisory group will be a model or a pilot for how we can start as a city re-engaging folks, building consensus, and designing our future together.
Delegate Robin Lewis, along with her House colleagues Luke Clippinger and Brooke Lehrman, represents Maryland's 46th Legislative District. The first Livable Streets meeting did take place last Saturday. We've got a link to the Livable Streets Facebook page on our website, wypr.org/midday. Delegate, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thanks so much.
I'm Tom Hall. Midday on Transportation continues after a quick break with Samuel Jordan of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition and Brian O'Malley of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. If you'd like to weigh in on transportation issues in and around the Baltimore metro area, our number on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. And we will be streaming on the WYPR Facebook page in just a second. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby will be my guest for the hour. As the fallout from the Gun Trace Task Force continues, we'll discuss the state's attorney's decision to drop as many as 800 criminal cases due to concerns about the testimony of some 25 police officers, a few of whom are still with the department. So Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby joins me here tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us, it's Midday on Transportation. According to the Baltimore City Department of Transportation, the Charm City Circulator saw a 48% decline in ridership last year. The Free Baltimore Shuttle has been plagued by long wait times and a shortage of buses since the city changed operators last year. And one effect of this, more people are driving cars more often. According to the Maryland Transportation Administrative Office of Planning and Programming's Capital Needs Inventory, the MTA requires $1.5 billion in immediate funding to bring equipment and infrastructure in compliance with regulations. The MTA already faces a shortfall of $2 billion over the next 10 years, but the state's current overall transportation budget is $1.1 billion less than last year's. So joining me to help us sort all of this out, Samuel Jordan, he's the president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition, and Brian O'Malley, he's the president and CEO of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. So do you rely on public transportation to get to and from work and school? We want to hear your experiences with local public transportation. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Sam Jordan, let me start with you. We had you guys on the show a few months ago, I think it was last June, and we've talked on several occasions. One of the things that folks don't seem to agree on is the set of data, the set of facts governing decisions about transportation. You refer to it with your organization as the empty data boast by the MTA. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, empty data boast is a way that we characterize this trend, actually, that we see now in the presentations of Kevin Quinn, the administrator of the MTA. He talks about having left the anecdotal stage, and they're now in a data stage. We think there's a third place they should be. That's experiential, based on what actually happens with the people who ride the system. But we gave examples of the data boasts. For example, they say that the on-time performance used to be in the 50s, 50 percentiles, and now it's increased to the 70 percentiles. But they never say when they are saying that, and Kevin did not say that on the program, because that they have changed the definition of on-time. Now on-time means 2 minutes early and 7 minutes late. Think of me as a rider. my bus is 5 minutes late, and my transfer bus is 2 minutes early. They're on time. But now I'm 45 minutes late for my job.
Because you've missed your transfer.
I've missed my transfer, and I've been late twice already this past year. That means in Baltimore region, with my job and so many others, 3 times 15 minutes late, you lose your job. No discussion. Get out of here. We call security. MTA does not take that into consideration. They don't take into consideration the length of commute times. We had an important article this morning on the average commute times being increased. We challenged them on their discussion about commute times, and they have stopped reporting average commute times. So in this database, there's this number of issues. For example, we have not gotten data, accurate data, on the shutdown of the Metro subway line back in February 2018. In fact, Kevin Quinn and Jim Ports, Secretary of Transport, Deputy Secretary, lied to the General Assembly in a committee meeting when they said that they shut down the system when they found out about the hazardous condition of the tracks on the Metro subway line.
But you're contending that wasn't the reason, or what?
Well, it was not true. Not only not the reason, but not true. They didn't report. They were refuted 2 days later by articles in the Baltimore Brew and the Baltimore Sun that they had known since November 2016 that 17 sections of the track on the Metro subway line were hazardous in what's called black condition. I'll spell it. I don't like saying black condition means, in this sense, get off the train. No movement on the rail whatsoever.
And you're saying that that condition was in effect for 2 years?
16 months, at least, from November 2016 to February 2018 when they said they made some repairs to it, but they did not report to their ridership. This is 40,000 people a day that you are close to derailment. Anything over 15 miles per hour or gauge face angle exceeding 26 degrees is close to derailment.
Okay, so Brian O'Malley, I mean, does that sound right to you? I mean, when it comes to the transparency and our trust in the credibility of the MTA and the figures that they're giving us, for example, when it comes to this subway shutdown that happened last winter, do you think the subway shutdown shouldn't have happened? I mean, it certainly inconvenienced an awful lot of people. I mean, were the conditions considerably worse than the one Sam is describing in 2016? What's your understanding of why that decision was made and whether or not it was a good one?
So, you know, safety is paramount, and we've seen, for example, in the WMATA system in Washington, they had a fatality a few years ago that helped lead to the call for investment in bringing their system to good repair. You know, they had a backlog of maintenance. I don't have firsthand knowledge beyond the reports that Sam referenced. I saw those as well. I understood that at the time that they felt that they had to shut things down immediately because there were unsafe conditions. I don't know why there was the delay between, you know, for that 16-month period. But I'm glad that we did, you know, we avoided a fatality on our system.
And Sam, are you confident that having the shutdown take place, the repairs made, that things are no longer in this, as you say, this black condition, which is the term
of art? Well, Tom, here's the problem. We haven't gotten any accounts from MTA yet. We have not gotten an explanation for actually what happened, nor have we gotten an explanation for why they lied to the General Assembly. What we feel in the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition is that the MDOT MTA model is not suitable for our region. This is not the only issue that we have with them. You've discussed several, and when you speak about the investments, what we want to do is make sure that people understand. Mm-hmm. Transportation is experienced and lived at the regional level, and that's where the decisions should be made.
Sam Jordan is my guest, along with Brian O'Malley. We're talking about transportation issues here in the Baltimore metro area. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Well, Sam Jordan, let me return to you. You're making a serious allegation about, you know, an official, Kevin Quinn, who has been on the show before. We made a decision today not to invite him back today because we wanted to talk to you two and make sure that you all had an ample opportunity to state your case and to state your concerns. You're saying he's, you know, not being truthful with other state officials. When it comes to the data that the MTA has published, for example, they say that the current system, the Link system, the buses in Baltimore, have 840,000 jobs located within a 15-minute walk, that it provides access to 400,000 jobs in a 60-minute commute. Do you contest that data? You don't think
Well, here's the problem
true?
With the data. Another reason why we challenged it. Brian O'Malley, right here in the studio, and I have actually asked for metrics from MTA. You see, without metrics, success of the link system is whatever MTA says it is. Without metrics and the ability to make independent verification of their allegations, we don't know what the truth really is.
So how should, for example, an on-time rate, Brian O'Malley, let me ask, send this to you. How should an on-time percentage rate be calculated? Is there a different algorithm that should be used or a different metric, as Sam has suggested, that we should be employing to figure out, you know, what's really happening in, as Sam says, the lived experiences of the riders?
Mm-hmm. Well, so the good is that we now have, the MTA has put on-time performance on its website in a searchable format, and that's really helpful to riders. Where we could improve is that definition of on time. MTA is an outlier. When it moved to defining, as Samuel referenced, on time as 2 minutes early to 7 minutes late, counting as on time, that's an outlier for the large transit systems in the country. Most are at like 0 minutes early to 5 minutes late, maybe 1 minute early to 5 minutes late. That's what we used to be, and we gave ourselves more cushion to still count it as on time. The other thing to point out is that we have seen some improvement, but we're still not there yet. So in September, the highest ridership routes in the system were, you know, in the 60s roughly for on-time performance. And that's even
and
with
that's
that
again
more,
according to the MTA.
Yes.
At some point you're going to have to accept their contention that, you know, this bus was on time, this bus wasn't, right?
I mean, yeah.
There's no independent monitor or anything, right?
Yeah, we've gone out and field checked sometimes, but it takes a lot of person power to stand there and track buses. But my point is, even by their own measure, we need to do better, right? 60% on time, especially if you're trying to make connections on a network to get where you ultimately need to be, isn't good enough. We need to get better. And some of that's on the MTA and some of that's on the city and Baltimore County where the buses are trying to operate. We need to give them signal prioritization. We need to give them lanes and enforce those lanes and help them move through our congested corridors.
Can you give me a sense nationally of some paradigms of systems that do work? I mean, if 60% is unacceptable, what's it like in Houston and Phoenix and Dallas and Atlanta? Are they 70%? Are they 90%? What's the paradigm that you look to?
Right. MTA's own goal is to get it better than 80%. So that's a first place to shoot for. Around the country, it is difficult to find apples-to-apples data to compare on-time performance. There was a snapshot given a couple years ago that had the 20 largest systems, and Miami had no data. MTA was 19th out of 20. So if you measure them using the same standard, MTA was near the bottom or as close to the bottom as you could be. But things have improved slightly since then, not drastically, but slightly. So maybe we're starting to climb up that rank list.
Mm-hmm. Sam Jordan, you've also been quite concerned about the MTA's refusal to accept your suggestion for a calculation of the cost to the regional economy.
Yes.
And you talk about transit detention and transit dismissal.
Right.
What's that? What are those metrics?
Well, they begin with transit dependence. People who don't have access to cars. And transit detention refers to the long commutes we have here in the area. 90-minute commutes. 2 out of 3 jobs within the Baltimore region cannot be reached within 90 minutes by public transportation. That's transit detention, when you're held captive against your will 3 to 4 hours every day due to a dysfunctional transportation system. There's also transit dismissal. I referred to that earlier, when 3 times 15 minutes late, you lose your job. But you lose your job because you can't predict when you'll arrive. We have so many people, Tom, who go to work an hour and a half early in order not to be late. Well, that too, in addition to the dismissal and the detention, a cost to the economy. We've calculated at least $375 million, but that's something that we need expertise in the data to calculate accurately. But we don't think MTA has taken that seriously. There is a continuing loss to the economy and its productivity with a poor transportation system.
Let's go to the phones to Ed in Baltimore. Ed, welcome to Midday with Brian O'Malley and Samuel Jordan.
Good afternoon, guys. I'm calling because I want to point out what is the fundamental flaw to our bus system. And the fundamental flaw to our bus system is, number one, capacity. Back when Ron Hartman was the administrator, we had 1,400 buses in the fleet. We have 750 now. They simply can't haul as many people. They get more crowded. They get late because people have to fight their way on and off. The bus stops are so far apart that you've got loads of people on a corner trying to board, and the bus sits there through three signal cycles. The fundamental problem, though, is that in order to improve vehicle on-time performance, not door-to-door on-time performance, they shortened the routes. And now many transfers that used to exist are gone, and people have to take up to four buses to get where they're going. Well, nobody does, and nobody can get to a job if they have to take four buses because they're so unreliable. And you're talking about some trips that could take 5.5 hours, literally. So if that's the situation and the buses don't start early enough, people cannot get where they're going, and we have balkanized the region in transit because not enough buses go through. Baltimore Link provided wonderful public outreach on routings, but not scheme. And the scheme was to shorten the routes and pull out bus stops to speed up the buses to get them on time. It has been a colossal disaster because people can't get anywhere if they have to take four buses and take 5.5 hours.
All right. Ed, I appreciate that comment. I understand, Ed, that you are a member of the MTA Citizens Advisory Committee for Accessible Transportation. Is that true?
Yes, I am, and I'm the former chair of that committee, and I also have been the chair of the Infrastructure and Planning Subcommittee.
All right. Well, thank you for your input. Brian O'Malley, Governor Hogan spent $135 million to overhaul and rebrand the transit system. Now it's called Baltimore Link. Ed is saying that here we are 2-3 years into this new system, and it's woefully inadequate. Is that a assessment that you share?
We've done a lot of looking at how, you know, whether we did a report called Are We Better Off, comparing before Baltimore Link with after. And our finding was very mixed, that the $135 million figure that you referenced is a figure that gets quoted a lot. If you look at the MTA's operating budget, it was as close to flat as you can be throughout those years. So we were essentially trying to rearrange existing resources and hoping for better results. And the results we got were mixed. We did create a high-frequency network. More people live near buses that are scheduled to run frequently, and that really is worth a lot to someone. If the bus comes frequently, you're not stuck waiting for, you know, looking at a schedule. You can come and go as you need. But reliability hasn't markedly improved, as I mentioned earlier. We measured something called access to jobs. You have to create a computer model of the system, but then you see how many jobs can I get to. It's a tool that Virginia uses, the tool that different places around the country use. And we found no significant increase in access to jobs. Some neighborhoods got better, some got worse, but overall we were roughly
so MTA, again, let me quote this data that they cite. Mm-hmm. MTA is saying that they provide access to 400,000 jobs within a 60-minute commute. You don't think that that's accurate?
That figure, I'm not certain. We found that it didn't increase, and we used a 45 minute, so we have a slightly different comparison. But the 400,000 in a 60-minute commute, I'm not sure about.
There is a lot of apples to oranges, I guess, when it comes to the thing. That mm-hmm. figure comes from the MDOT and the MTA 10-year capital needs inventory and prioritization document that they issued in July. I mean, Sam Jordan, again, the folks that you are working with are living, as you do every day, yes, on the actual bus system. Well, anecdotally, there's an awful lot of people who are still very dissatisfied with the Baltimore Link system.
Well, I think Ed used the term colossal disaster. We would echo that. But what you've heard in the discussion with Brian as well is what measures are being used to arrive at these conclusions. That's why we've asked for the metrics, so they can be independently verified. They are still not independently verified.
Okay, so just so I understand, you're not suggesting a set of metrics. You just really want to know what
we
the NTA's
what
metrics are,
what
and then you want to examine those for their
embarrassment. And we also want to demonstrate whether or not these are valid metrics for that particular measurement. Now, something else. When we speak of MTA, for us it means more trouble ahead. More trouble ahead. That's what we mean by MTA. Because now we're in a crisis of investments and actual money being spent in the system. Okay, we learned in the so-called roadshow on the 27th that there's no more money. There's no money to spend on transit. In fact, they're saying that they haven't cut back. They simply completed projects in the pipeline. We don't buy that.
Okay, let me ask you to hold that thought, because I do want to talk about the budget impacts after we take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about these budget shortfalls. A whole lot of numbers getting thrown around, $2 billion short, $1.5 billion, and I'm going to ask both of you guys to sort that out for us. Samuel Jordan is the president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. Brian O'Malley is the president and CEO of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. Midday, we'll come back with more on transportation after a quick break. 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. You can follow me on Twitter at @TomHallWYPR. You can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page as well. Before we go to a break, a quick reminder about our Midday in the Neighborhood series. We want to hear from folks who are active in their neighborhood. So if you are out there doing things to better your community, please send us your contact information so that we can invite you to be on the show at some point. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org. And one of our producers will be in touch. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about transportation challenges and the decline of public transportation ridership in the greater Baltimore area. If you'd like to weigh in on transportation issues, you can give us a call or send us an email. Also, the MTA will be holding a series of public meetings in partnership with the Greater Washington Partnership, the Central Maryland Alliance, and other organizations. The first one is on the 21st of October in Howard County at the Elk Ridge Library. The one for Baltimore City is going to happen at the Mondawmin Mall at 4 o'clock on October 22nd. And we've got a full list of all the meeting dates and locations on the Midday website. My guests today are Brian O'Malley, the president and CEO of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance, and Samuel Jordan. He's the president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. Our number is 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. And you can catch us and ping us on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Brian O'Malley, your group did a study that says that folks in the Baltimore area are driving a whole lot more than we used to.
It's actually it's actually statewide, and it comes from the Maryland Department of Transportation. 2018, we had the most driving measured in vehicle miles traveled in the history of the state, and we had the most driving per capita. So it's not just that the population's growing; it's each of us is driving more than it ever before. That's also
which has environmental implications and many other implications.
I wanted
traffic jam
to
implications.
Add that Maryland's going up faster than the country, and has been over the last 5 years or the last 10 years, in terms of how much we're driving. It contributes to pollution. We now know that tailpipes are the number one source of climate change pollution. It contributes to traffic congestion. Our hours of delay being stuck in traffic keeps going up despite, you know, widening highways and building roads. And so our argument is we need to try a better solution and shift. Our priorities are not in the right place. We're throwing millions of dollars, billions of dollars at widening highways, and we need to invest more in our transit system. That's not saying eliminating driving, but we need to stop breaking our own record of driving more miles each year. That's not going to get us where we need to be.
And Sam Jordan, it's a confusing morass for folks who don't study this the way that you and Brian study it closely. But when it comes to these numbers, the money for Maryland Transit Administration capital projects is set to be reduced by about $345 million. And the MTA already faces a shortfall of over $2 billion over the next 10 years. So what's the practical implication of that? I mean, clearly we have a governor who very much favors road transportation to public transportation. He's been pretty clear about that. But what's the effect of those kinds of cuts? The MTA seems to be underfunded in a pretty serious way.
Well, impact, one thing. What it means it's to how they arrived at that, how we got to this position is another thing. We got to this position with the budget because mass transportation, particularly urban transit, is not a priority of this administration. Never has been. Over the 4 years that we've advocated for the completion of the Red Line, there's not been one transit extension project in the Baltimore region. In fact, not in 30 years.
The Purple Line over in the
right.
D.C. service.
That's not our Baltimore region.
Right.
In fact, I'm glad you mentioned it. The cancellation of the Red Line here and the approval of the Purple Line proceeding, letting it proceed in Montgomery and Prince George's County, has balkanized the state's economy, economic geography. Decline in Baltimore region was 49% of the state's economy when he was elected. Now it's an accelerated decline. But along the Purple Line, $12 billion in projects have already been committed to the Purple Line. That should be happening right here, right now.
Because of their
Baltimore.
Proximity to
right.
the public transportation.
Because of the fact that rail drives development and is the best proven driver of development in the country today. But you asked several other questions. I won't try to answer them all. But we're talking about investment and priorities. When there is, as we stated before, where there's gross inequality, there's always gross underinvestment. That's what we're seeing right now. If we take a step back and take a look, why is Baltimore suffering worse than anybody else in the state with these cuts? Because, one, we've lost. We've lost the transformative key to the economy. Whenever you step outside of your front door any day of the week, you are beginning now to make transportation decisions.
Yeah.
Transportation.
And, of course, and as your organization, you know, brings to the fore all the time, there is a racial dimension to this. It's the equity coalition.
And we're replicating
it. Yeah.
We're stuck in it. Larry Hogan is a slave to segregationist transit policy that has followed us before even redlining. But I want to make this absolutely clear.
Let me make this real quick call, because I do want to get to some of our callers.
We can take the reins on this issue. The Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition, we can talk about it later when there's a little more time, of course. We are promoting and we will seek to put a ballot initiative on the ballot in the 2020 election to create a regional transportation authority right here with Baltimore taking the lead. And we want everybody who listens to join us in that effort.
So we're coordinated with the rest of the region.
Yes. I want to make sure they know they can meet.
Not just Maryland, but when you say regional, are we talking Virginia?
We're talking about right now here, Baltimore and Baltimore County would be the chartered jurisdictions.
Okay.
Okay?
So we're talking
Samuel.Jordan@moretransitequity.com.
All right. We'll post that link on the website. Let's go to the phones. We have a bunch of callers. We'll try to get to as many as we can. Let's go to Eugenia in Baltimore. Welcome to Midday.
Hi. I'm a retired school teacher, and I remember one student that I had not that long ago. She was very young. She had a child. She had to give that child a subsidized daycare so that she could come to school. It took her 2.5 hours by bus to get the child to daycare and another 2.5 to get back to school. And as a consequence, somehow or another, she found herself a car. She's 15. She had no driving experience. She had no license. The car was not registered, and there was no insurance. But that was her method of getting her child to daycare. And I just want to ask, what are the economic costs of that?
Yeah, of course. Well, thank you for that anecdote. It's incredible. I mean, you know, folks, you get desperate, you do what you got to do, even if it's outside the law. Let's go to Charlie in Owings Mills. Charlie, welcome to Midday.
Yeah, hi. So I'd like to make a comment, you know, not just about the infrastructure itself, but also the people manning the infrastructure. I'm a student at CCBC. And I have some classes in Catonsville, some classes in Essex, and I take transit fairly regularly from Owings Mills. And a few weeks ago, on my way back from classes at Essex, I passed through a metro station. I passed through the Charles Center metro station, which had no attendant at the time, and I actually got mugged. And I find that when I'm going through these stations, is, you know, especially at the Owings Mills station, for example, at least somewhere between, I'd say, 30 to 50% of the time, there's no attendant.
All right. Well, I'm sorry that that happened to you. What time of day or night was that the incident when you were mugged occurred?
It was in the evening. It was, I would say, a little bit after 10 in the evening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry that that was your experience, to be sure. But thank you for your call. Let's go to Diane. Diane, welcome to Midday. You're calling from Baltimore.
Thank you very much. I have been living in Baltimore for the last 40 years. I am from New York originally, and I've also I've traveled extensively around the world. And I and my friends talk about, and we're also getting to be seniors, and we talk about the fact that there's a real lack of public transportation that we can access as we get older. The other issue is that you've got a metro and a light rail on the same side of this county and the city, and nothing on the other side. So there's really not a lot of access for especially older people who use mass transportation in Baltimore.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that comment. And Brian O'Malley, I mean, the cultural shift of what it's going to take for more people to be comfortable using public transportation is a thing that is, of course, going to require some political leadership at some point.
Yeah. Nationally, we know that a huge percentage of the trips that are being made by driving alone are 2 miles or less. So these are trips that could be and used to be made by walking or taking a bus or biking. And we could go back in that direction. We talk about at the Transportation Alliance that a great transportation system gives you choices. So you have the option to drive, but you're not required to drive to get where you need to go. For too many people, we have anecdotes like Eugenia shared that you know, a young person felt like she had to break the law to drive because that was the only viable option to get to daycare and to school. Or the last caller referred to people aging and then feeling like they're trapped because they can't access the system.
Sure. And Sam Jordan, make a quick comment, then
sure.
I have a comment from a listener.
What we're actually referring to now is the lack of not only reliability, but of what we call rationalization in the transportation system. That is, light rail, east-western Baltimore is long needed. East-western Baltimore from Bayview in the east to Woodlawn CMS in the west. But rail that can rationalize the bus routes as well. When we have 14.2 mile route for the Red Line, 19 stations, we should be able to route the bus system into a multimodal compatibility, shall we say. That is, lines.
So you're
and
saying
routes,
that the buses by themselves aren't going to cut it, but the buses in conjunction with a light rail system
will be a lot better, a lot faster, but they also have to be planned so they get people to where they want to go. The link at $135 million over 6 years is no way can replicate or substitute for the benefits of the Red Line light rail project.
Here's a question from Eamon, who says, what percentage of the buses have GPS tracking? Can that be used to measure the on-time rate? And another big issue is the no-show rate, especially when the tracker shows buses as on time because it doesn't have a tracker. So the ability to know when the next bus is coming is very important to ridership. What about that?
That's a recent improvement. The MTA replaced the system on the technology on the buses, so you get a much more reliable signal. For example, I use the Transit app, which is the one that partners with the MTA, and it's gotten better over recent years. In the last year or so, as they've started to install the GPS device on all the fleet, and so I think it is a much more useful tool. It doesn't happen as often that you get a false signal. Like it used to.
But, Tom, we can't overlook something that the caller has also referenced that demands our attention. Connectivity of the system. When I talk about rationalization, I'm also including connectivity. Our north-south rail lines, the Metro Subway and the light rail, don't connect. They don't have anything else that connects them. A red line light rail project, east, west, and Baltimore, would provide that connectivity, but we're not stopping there. We want the red line to be the beginning of a build-out of a light rail network for Central Maryland.
Let's go to Melinda in Towson. Melinda, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am. You're on the air.
I was just wondering if you had any comment about the possibilities of rise in crime when you're extending some of the bus lines and the different public transportation. Obviously, it's great to have that, but sometimes some of the unexpected consequences that, you know, it opens your neighborhood up to any type of foot traffic. And I know even in my neighborhood, we've especially been targeted pretty hard by people that don't live there. And then they come to these neighborhoods that they think are, you know, well-to-do or whatever the targeting is.
And you're calling from Towson, Melinda, is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another guy who was, there was like five people stabbed at the Hunt Valley Center. And the gentleman, I think he had some type of mental thing, but he had come on the light rail there, and he'd actually stabbed somebody on the light rail earlier that day. And so a lot of the talking is like, you know, people are kind of feeling like,
yeah. Well, thanks, you know, thanks for that comment, Melinda. I think we get your drift. And Sam Jordan, this is something we hear all the time. Let's be
it is not
straight about
funny.
This.
It is not funny.
Let's be straight about this. There are white people in the suburbs who don't want the light rail and the subway going out to where they live because
absolutely.
They are afraid of the riffraff coming out. We see this
riffraff,
when you just go
absolutely.
Over the line and in East Baltimore into Dundalk. You know that there was that incident at the fair last year. I mean, how do you
let's
respond
go directly
to
that? First of all, Tom, there is no appreciable increase in crime on public transportation than there is in going to the grocery store, okay? Studies show there is no association between crime and public transportation than your safety at the grocery store, okay? But let's talk about what's happened in this region, because you're absolutely right. That's a trope that's used. It's not substantiated because we've dealt with this in Baltimore County and in Anne Arundel County. Last year, the executive of Anne Arundel County, Steve Hsu, appealed to the governor twice, I mean passionately, shut down all light rail in Anne Arundel County because there's a new wave of crime of criminals, drug addicts, and homeless persons coming from Baltimore, which is code language. This is a dog whistle. These are black people they're talking about. The police department in Anne Arundel County itself broke with the county exec and said, we cannot support this claim. There is no such light rail associated crime. The same thing happened in Baltimore County after a melee at White Marsh last August 4th, 2018. Kids fought at a mall. That's not unusual, but that happened. Okay, we don't promote it, of course. But
finding a link between that and public transportation.
Right, but the reflexive response from the politicals in Baltimore County was ask MTA to shut down public transportation. Okay, what we're saying is
so when we're talking
we've
about
got
this,
to fight
because we're out of time now. When you're talking about this regional transportation authority,
regional
that's
means,
the kind of thing that could be taken
but,
up and
but here's what also happens. As long as we don't address this question, the Baltimore region will not have a modern transportation system.
And, of course, with all of the concerns about funding for Kerwin, funding for, you know, transportation is going to be a difficult thing to achieve. So, Brian O'Malley, Sam Jordan, I very much appreciate both of you coming by, and we will keep checking in with you periodically.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Sam Jordan is the president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. Brian O'Malley is the president and CEO of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. That's it for us today. Tomorrow, my guest for the hour will be Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn
Mosby. We want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared has been recently recognized by the Daily Meal. You can find menu and hours at joesquared.com. Here and Now is coming up next after the news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Very much appreciate your listening. Be safe out there. Have a great day.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.